Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Now, the Consumer Law Hour with Eddie and Chuck Farah on News 104.5 WOKV.
Good afternoon and happy Saturday. You're listening to Consumer Law Hour here on WOKV. I'm Candace Thomas, your host. We're here with Eddie and Chuck Farah from Farah and Farah. How are you guys doing?
Really good, Candace.
Good to see you here today.
Good, Candace. Thanks for...
If we can't be good, we're trying to be careful anyway.
And they are here to answer your legal questions. So give us a call. The phone number is 855-765-1045. Again, that phone number is 855-765-1045. So being careful if you can't be good.
Yeah, I was trying to cut up a little bit. But I'm going to start the show off with a question. We're typically starting off with hopefully get some answers, but maybe there's somebody in law enforcement out there or somebody who's really been keeping up with the police officer who's being prosecuted criminally for the Parkland shooting. And I kind of followed it, and I really haven't don't know too much about it, but I mean, is dereliction of duty, if that's what he's charged with, is that a criminal act?
Yeah.
That's just what I don't know. I mean, an officer.
I believe one of the charges were child neglect.
Him not going in. Okay.
Yeah.
So it's child. Okay. If he has that responsibility not to. Okay. Maybe it's a child neglect charge.
Yeah.
Okay. I was wondering because I mean, what does dereliction of duty, is that it? Maybe you can get fired, maybe you can lose your pension or whatever they can do to suspend you, but what does that have to do with a criminal complaint? And I guess I have to prove that if he had gone in, then he would have, that person would not have been injured.
And I think
that's going to be very difficult to prove.
And I think one of the other things, two additional deputies were fired this week. They published their internal report. And as a result, two other deputies. But I can understand in a bit where they're coming from because, not only did he fail to do his job, but from the information that they've shared, it seems like he hindered other people from by not conveying at least the information. Because I think it's one thing for you not to do your job and go into the building, but then if you're not at least conveying that to the other people on scene, then it seems like you're hindering.
Yeah, I can see again being fired for that.
Right.
Again, from a criminal side, you have to be able to prove that if he had gone in or did his job, then the children, somebody would have been saved or somebody.
Right.
Yeah,
you
know, I don't know how you're going
to
do that.
Yeah, that is difficult to prove.
If he could have gone inside and went the wrong and just thought the shooting was in a different area and gone to a whole different section of the school and he was inside, he did what he was supposed to do. He just got there too late or it was over by the time he got there.
Yeah.
So I don't know.
Yeah,
anyway,
definitely. If anybody has any insight on this, then please give us a call. The phone number is 855-765-1045.
I think it'd be a difficult case to prove, but we'll see what happens.
Yeah.
Down there, I think he probably will ask for a change of venue. It'd be difficult for him to get a fair trial down there. So we'll see how that plays out. But maybe somebody who's listening who's been keeping up with it more than I have and can enlighten us on that. But this kind of follows into something we brought up at the end of the show last week, talking about malicious prosecution. I mean, in the tort system or civil justice system, we typically hear of, car accidents, slip and fall cases, products liability, slander, people want to file slander cases. But you can file a suit for malicious prosecution against somebody that gets you arrested when they act in complete disregard to the truth. So if somebody goes to the police station and files a criminal complaint against you and you end up getting arrested, and then after that, you're completely absolved and the prosecution drops all the charges. And you may have a case for malicious prosecution against that person who filed the criminal complaint. But the problem is it's a high standard of care. It's not if a person is in good faith, makes a criminal complaint against you. No way. You don't have a case of malicious prosecution. If they have to act with malice.
Right.
You almost have to intentionally do it.
Yeah, it's an intentional act.
It's like an intentional. I mean, I go to the police, I almost have to fabricate the fact scenario.
So what qualifies as malice, because is malice just like they're doing out of spite, they hate you, or could it be, they didn't research it?
It's based on the facts of the case, and a jury would determine malice.
Okay.
That was one of the elements. If you go in front of a jury and you're suing somebody who had you put in jail, and as a result, you know, the charges have to be dropped,
right,
and you have to have suffered some damages. I mean, I guess being locked up for a while or damages for sure.
Yeah.
I mean, that's a, it's a false imprisonment type situation you would have. But I have two cases here that were Florida cases. And one, the court found there was enough evidence for a malicious prosecution case.
I'm going to put you on hold just real quick. We'll get right back to that. But right now we've got Bill on the line. He's in Ocean Way. He has a question about voluntary repossession. Hi,
hey,
Bill. How are you?
Bill, how you doing?
Hey, how y'all guys?
Good.
Hey, I got a situation where I went to trade a vehicle in because I was purchasing a new one. And then when the financing and everything was done on the new vehicle, they decided they didn't want the other vehicle for a trade-in. So I contacted the finance company for the other car and, you know, tried to work something out with them to do maybe a refinancing or something to lower the rates so that I could be able to make payments on both vehicles and all. Which they said they don't do any refinancing. So I told them, I said, well, you know, since I can't do both cars, you know, I guess I need to return this one to you guys or something. Well, that's been going on for about 2 months. They won't come and get the vehicle or anything or tell me where I can return it. They said because their office in Salt Lake City is too hard for them, and then they're harassing me on a daily basis, wanting to know when the payments are going to be paid on that thing. So I just wanted to see what kind of legal.
Yeah. Well, first of all, you're still obligated under that contract. Unless, you know, and they can repossess it and they'll sell it. Your best bet is to try to get to sell the vehicle. And if there's a difference in what you owe and what it's worth, you may have to pay that. But your other alternative may be that if you had something in writing with the person that you bought the new car from, where they said, we would take your car back. And either buy it from you or, you know, deal with it on their own. And if that's in writing, that's a contract you can enforce against the people you bought the first car from, the new car from. What do you have in writing from them?
I didn't have anything in writing from them. They were trying to, you know, like I said, they were trying to do everything. And they figured out that they had rebates in place and everything that could pretty much give me the same thing what I was going to get on the trade. So they decided they didn't want to do the trade on it. Just gave me the rebates. So.
All right, so you had nothing in writing from them.
Right.
Hello? Yeah. Yeah, because, I mean, you could maybe argue, I mean, an oral contract is binding, but they're going to say, I mean, you're going to have one version, they're going to have a different version. They're going to probably say they never promised you that they would take the car back. So, yeah, that's a difficult situation, unless you have witnesses and, I don't know, I mean... If they had people with you that could corroborate that they promised to take the vehicle from you and and sell it or buy it from you and pay off the note. But really right now they could come pick up the vehicle. You know what they do when they come? Huh?
Yeah, I mean, that's what they ask them to do, but nobody, you know, they're saying it's too far away. It would cost them too much money to come and get it.
I know, but what's going to happen is when they, if you don't pick it, they'll find somebody to get it. I mean, they can call somebody here to come pick it up. I mean, they have contacts all over the country. So what they'll do, they'll take it, and then they'll sell the vehicle for whatever they can get and sue you for the difference.
Yeah.
And that's why you're better off trying to sell the car, because they'll sell it for whatever they can get for it, because they're not worried about it.
Yeah, you'll maximize that.
Yeah, and they'll come sue you for the difference. And not only that, next time you apply for credit, you're going to have that black, you know, that check mark in your credit report. It's not going to look good that you got a repossession. So, I mean, that's why you want to dispose of it, pay off the note, and be done with it. I know it's going to be some work, and you may have to come out of pocket. Is a car worth, is a car worth what you owe on it?
It's just a little bit over. Gonna have about $3,000 difference. So.
Of what you mean? So you owe $3,000 more than what it's worth?
Than what it's worth? Yeah.
I mean, although maybe you could. I don't know. You're gonna have to work. I mean,
you're better
off
selling
it. Affect your credit if you try to sell it and come up with the $3,000. Try to borrow the $3,000. You know, and do that. I mean,
okay.
I mean, that's what I would recommend. I don't, unless you just don't have it, or the then eventually you'll have to deal with it later on. But again, it's a credit issue down the road. Because the next time you apply for credit, they're going to charge you a higher rate of interest because you got that repossession on your record. You know, everybody knows. All right. Well, good luck.
Yeah. Thanks, Bill.
I wish I had a better answer for you.
We are still taking your calls. The phone number is 855-765-1045. You're listening to Consumer Law Hour here on WOKV. Welcome back to Consumer Law Hour here on WOKV. I'm here with Eddie and Chuck Fair from Fair and Fair. They're here to answer your legal questions, so give us a call. The phone number is 855-765-1045. And before the break, we were talking about malicious prosecution. And so right now we've got Ted on the north side, and he's got a question about that. How are you doing, Ted?
Hey, Ted.
All right. How you doing?
Yeah, man.
How you doing, Eddie?
Good.
My question is, I mean, I'm going through a divorce, and I had accusations said about me, and even false police reports and stuff like that. But I wasn't, you know, put in jail or anything, but it has affected my relationship with my children, my young children. And would that be grounds for anything there? Or
well, here, malicious prosecution, you have to be arrested. You were not arrested. And I'll tell you, I mean,
there could be civil actions.
There could be civil. You could,
you could be sued, but.
Well, civil action, that's malicious prosecution is a civil action. Here, what you're talking about is there may be immunity when there's a certain immunity called, it's part of a lawsuit, that people, things said during the course of a lawsuit, like the divorce you're going through, there's an immunity by the person who's making these accusations. Because the court wants people to be free in terms of expressing what's going on or what the nature of the lawsuit is. So that's one issue you have, is the immunity, because it's a court proceeding. Now, you could maybe have a slander claim. That's different. That's a civil action. You weren't arrested, but she's slandering your name. I mean, that's a possibility. But again, I think the court proceeding immunity may not allow you to do it.
Yeah. I mean, it's because it's like she filed a false injunction on me, and we went through depositions, and there was perjury, and I've got all kinds of evidence to back up everything that I'm saying. And, you know, it's just been a whirlwind here. I mean, it's been hard to go through.
Yeah, I know, but I know people. It's really bad, because especially when you know you're not guilty of any of that, and they're making all these wild acts, trying to get an advantage in the divorce. But if you have a good lawyer, will be able to defeat that and show what this person is really all about. But again, I think if you look it up, after, you know, later on today, if you on Google, Florida has an immunity that's part of a court proceeding where people can almost say, unless they're just outright lying, whatever they can say it in the course of a court proceeding and not be subject to like a malicious prosecution or a slander.
Okay.
I'm just not real familiar with it, but I know it's part of the law.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I appreciate it. Thank you for your time.
That's why you have a lawyer who can cross-examine the other party and prove that person's not telling the truth. I mean, that's...
Yeah, I mean, it's similar.
The legal system.
It's similar. You can have a malicious use of the civil process system also, where somebody just files frivolous lawsuits against you just to harass.
Yeah,
that's right.
She's filing false.
Yeah,
she's filing false police reports.
Yeah.
You know.
Well, she's getting close. Now, what you could maybe do is make her be responsible for the attorney's fees it cost you to defend it. That's what your lawyer should be asking for.
It's been thousands of dollars so far.
Yeah. You need to get the attorney's fees back and do that. That's what your lawyer can do for you.
Okay.
Yeah. All right.
Well,
I'm going to talk
about a little bit more about it, but these cases are they're close to what you're talking about. But
Ted, we had asked earlier when we were talking about malicious prosecution. Before we started talking about that, we were talking about the Parkland officer. So it looks like we've got Frank in Bay Meadows on the line who has a perspective on that. How are you doing, Frank?
Hey, Frank.
Yes, hi. Hello, Eddie. Thanks for the show again. Sure, sure. I actually talked to you quite at length about a year ago about the chokehold cop in New York. I'm an expert.
Oh, yeah. Yes, right. I remember that.
Well, I wrote you a letter. The one word nobody ever talks about that nobody can quantify is the word courage. Courage. You may have more courage than me. You might shoot faster or not shoot faster than me. He should be terminated, but you know what's really insidious? If you watch the news going on in this country all over, there's a guy the other day, they're charging cops with murder. Murder over shootings in the line of duty. He moved. He didn't move. I saw. I didn't see. To think that a cop heads out to shoot somebody and kill him, not that it couldn't happen, I guess, but it's so preposterous as to be ludicrous. And what you're getting, I worked in the 60s, 70s, 80s. New York City cops, including me, broke my heart. We were running away from stuff, not to get involved. And the crime in the city went crazy. I mean, who would want to lose their career and go to prison over taking an action that judges decide over a year or two, and you go bing, bang, boom in a matter of seconds?
Yeah, but this guy's going to jail for not taking action.
Right. And well, that's what I'm saying. I mean, he should be terminated. I have no problem. But courage, lack of courage. Yeah. You've made a great point proving that, you know, lives would have been saved. But the bigger issue here is the word around the country, murder. It's been going on for years. They started in New York City with murder charges on cops for various incidents. And this is our Achilles heel in this country, the race relations and what they're telling cops. The thing in South Bend the other day, they're screaming. Everyone's, white cop killed a black man. He was called to the scene, car break-ins. He catches the guy with property. The guy stabs and throws a knife at him that he stole from one of the prior cars. And he shoots him once. They put him in a radio car to try to take him to the hospital and save him. They get criticized over that. So he would have been better off just seeing the guy's legs sticking out of the car that he was burglarizing. He just should have kept on going.
Mm-hmm. These are all facts-based.
And we're all paying the price. And people and who pays the bigger price? The minority people, the blacks and browns. And then they used to scream, yeah, we all know the police know what's going on out here. They're not doing anything. And they had a point because we were terrified politically to get involved.
Yeah, I just don't know. The Parkland thing to me is a whole separate, you said, I mean, I'm just trying to get my hands around it. How are you going to prove that if he had gone in, that he would have saved someone's life or I don't know. That's going to be difficult.
Yeah, you're a great legal point. That is great.
And you got to prove a connection. I mean, if it wouldn't have made a difference, he had gone down a different hallway thinking the shooter was over there. It would have been in the same place as he was staying outside. So. Mm-hmm. But
and I think I saw something in their first issues where maintaining a perimeter and waiting for backup and all this crazy stuff. If that's in the record, the whole thing should be thrown out. It will be thrown out.
Yeah.
Well, but again, the bigger issue is these crazy charges, this crazy witch hunt. If you're a white cop in America and you're involved with a minority person, you really, really, really have to sweat it. You really do. And Baltimore is a case, too. Look what happened after the Freddie Gray thing. Tons of cops in Baltimore are pulling back. Tons of cops in all these big cities, for the most part.
What do you mean pulling back? Just not wanting to get involved?
Not doing the job. Eddie, you get a call of your burglary in progress. And we're worried about getting an involvement. So I put the lights and siren on and make a lot of noise. We go about 20 miles an hour. Everybody's gone. We make out a nice report.
We go to
the station house and we have 20 reports for some coffee, a little ice cream, whatever you want.
Yeah, I got you.
See what I'm saying?
Yep.
And the taxpayers are getting the good taxpayer, the innocent person. Again, all the areas I worked in were mostly black and brown. The crime, what happened to these people, and their untold story about being victimized is incredible because this Democrat, this crazy mantra of murder charges, murder, Eddie, you know what murder is. It's different than, say, criminally negligent homicide, bad enough, or manslaughter. Mm-hmm. Murder charges.
Yeah.
I mean, like we set out, if you and I are working together, we say, hey, I'm so bored tonight, Eddie. What do you want for some excitement? Hey, look at the black guy over there. Whoa, let's shoot him in the back. Even better. Whoa, that's a great idea.
Yeah.
Appreciate your call, though, Frank.
Yeah, thanks, Frank.
Thanks for weighing in.
I appreciate it.
Take care.
I mean, these are just really fact-specific situations.
Yeah, every case.
I mean, intent.
Every case. Yeah.
Intent has to be shown.
Yeah. Murder. Yeah. That Parkland one is going to be really interesting to see how that plays out. We are here taking your legal calls. If you have a question, the phone number is 855-765-1045. You're listening to Consumer Law Hour with Farron Farah here on WOKV. Welcome back to Consumer Law Hour here on WOKV. We are here with Eddie and Chuck from Farron Farah. They are here to answer your legal questions. Give us a call. The phone number is 855-765-1045. Again, that phone number is 855-765-1045. And right now we've got Julia on the line from the north side. She's got a question about life insurance and whether a policy can be taken out without somebody's knowledge. How are you doing, Julia?
Hi there. We're doing really great.
Good to hear. Yeah. So let us know what's going on.
Well, I was wondering if a life insurance policy can be taken out on a person without their knowledge or consent. I know a gentleman who's been a widow for 15 or 20 years, and he has no children, and he only has distant relatives, and he has a lot of acquaintances but no close friends. He likes to go on cruises, and he likes to go to the bingo, and he likes to go to the senior citizen center. But how would a person find out if a life insurance policy has been taken out on them without their knowledge?
That's a good question. So you think somebody has a life insurance on him that if he dies, when he dies, somebody gets that money?
Well, I don't think that has actually happened in this case, but it got me to thinking, how would a person know?
First of all, to insure somebody's life, you have to have an insurable interest. There has to be some sort of relationship there, husband, wife. And a lot of times there are people that don't know there's a life insurance taken out. And an example that I saw once where some banks used to take insurance policies out on the officers in the bank, big insurance policies. And I read this where, even after they left the bank would keep paying the premium and collecting these big policies after these people died. They didn't even know the policy was being taken out, but the bank had an insurable interest because that person worked at the bank and, so there was a connection there. But for a person just to buy a life insurance policy on somebody who doesn't have an insurable interest may be difficult.
Yeah.
Now, if that person's taking care of somebody, let's say this person who plays bingo and is kind of retired and goes on cruises is taking care of you and you depend on him for something, maybe you could take a life insurance policy out on him because there's an insurable interest there. But if it's just somebody you don't even know, a stranger, it's going to be difficult.
But there's no way to check with the insurance commissioner?
No, there's no way to know.
Because there'll be a beneficiary. That person will know.
Person who's making the premium is the only person who's going to know.
Yeah.
Like if you try to take a policy out on this person, let's say you want to go to somewhere, Prudential, and say, I want a $50,000 life insurance policy on this. Well, they're going to say, what's your insurable interest? What's your connection with this person? That's what they're going to ask.
Well, it would be up to the insurance agent,
The underwriting company. The agent's going to ask, and the underwriting company's going to say, what's the connection? I mean, there are the example I gave you where the banks were buying life insurance policies on their employees. They had an insurable interest. The employees didn't know about it, but they did it.
Well, that somehow seems like something maybe the legislature should at least make the public aware, and like every time a policy is taken out, that the name of the insured and the name of the beneficiary should be on some computer list somewhere.
Or they should be notified.
Exactly.
You don't have to put it out to the public because all that's private. I mean, there's no way to find out about a life insurance policy. That money gets paid out. It's not recorded anywhere because it's not taxable. There's no taxes on life insurance. So when you get that check, it's not reported on your tax return. I don't know. So it could be, anyway.
When you watch that Justice television station that has a lot of the detective cases, there's been several of them where that was the motive of the murder, mm-hmm. was to collect on the insurance policy.
Yeah, sure. Yeah. They'll find that out.
Yeah.
They'll know about it.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much for your call,
Thanks,
Julia. You have
good
a good
question,
one.
Julia.
Thank you.
Yeah.
So right now we've got Bill from Hastings on the line, and here's a question about the rights of bus riders.
Sure.
How are you,
yes,
Bill?
Hey, Bill. I actually have a couple of questions that pertain to the rights of bus riders on public transportation. We have a bus called the Sunshine Bus, which serves as our public transportation in the area. It's actually a private company, but funded by the county. And my first question is, if a person has a concealed weapons permit issued by the state of Florida, and they ride the bus, and then the bus on the inside has a light that lists their rules, like one of those moving lighted signs that lists the rules on the bus, and one of them says weapons are not permitted, would they have a right to enforce that rule against someone who has a concealed carry permit?
I think so,
yes.
You think so. They do have a right to prohibit possession of, mm-hmm. of weapons on the bus?
Right.
Even though it's issued by the state of Florida, and the state of Florida has a supremacy clause saying that only the state can regulate firearms and not local entities like counties.
Yeah, but you have a concealed permit, concealed weapons permit. You can't take it to a Jaguars football game.
Right, but that's a private entity, and it seems different than public transportation. I know, but
you're saying because it's funded by the state.
Well, have you contacted the bus company and asked them?
I spoke to individual bus drivers, gotten different opinions on it. I'm just wondering if there was ever an incident on the bus and I pulled out a weapon, would I be committing unlawful use of a weapon by possessing it in spite of the fact that there's a sign inside the bus but no sign outside the bus that says weapons are not permitted?
You mean if you're defending yourself and somebody tries to attack you on the bus, you pull out your gun and shoot them? That's self-defense. How could you...
Right.
In
other words, it would be self-defense, but self-defense or defense of others, actually. But it would be in violation of their policy against carrying weapons on the bus.
Well, who pays for the bus? Is it city or state, county?
Well, it's funded by the county,
right?
Which is St. John's County in this case.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm wondering if they have the authority to do that in view of the state supremacy clause involving firearms regulation.
Well, it could be a state law. It could be a state regulation.
I was wondering if you knew the answer.
I don't know.
I mean, Chuck's right. It could be a state regulation that prohibits firearms on buses.
Public transportation.
Yeah, public transportation.
I'm not sure of the answer.
I don't know the answer to that.
Okay, you don't know the answer to that. Now, the other day there was this different incident involving the bus where a bus driver called in sick. And we take two buses to get home because they have one called the Circulator that handles people out in the outlying areas like Flagler Estates. So there's a bus called the Circulator, and one of the Circulator drivers called in sick. And my wife was heading home on the bus and had to get off at a location short of our home because of the fact that a bus driver had called in sick. So they wouldn't drive her all the way home. They dropped her off at this place called the Buzz Mart, convenience store, and she would have had to walk about 2 miles from there to get home. Are they violating a duty to the passengers when they do something like that and won't drive the person all the way home?
Well, was she at... she wasn't, nothing happened to her, did it?
Yeah, this happened to my wife.
I thought maybe she wasn't, attacked or assaulted. Was she attacked or assaulted or anything?
No, this didn't involve any sort of attack or assault.
Oh, okay.
It's just that this particular incident just involved her being...
stranded.
Being more or less stranded short of her destination by the fact that a bus driver called in sick. Mm-hmm. And rather than having the bus she was on drive her all the way home, They acted like they're doing her a big favor to even drive her as far as the buzz mark.
Yeah, that's difficult because that's 2 miles is a long way. I don't know. I mean, I think...
It so happened that a passerby gave my wife a ride home.
Yeah, I just don't know what... that's another good question. You have two good questions I don't know the answers to. I think there's a contact
on the part of the bus company to get a passenger all the way home in the event that a bus driver calls in sick, a bus breaks down, or anything like that.
Did they let her know prior to her getting on the bus?
She had no way of knowing that someone was going to call in sick, and as a result, the bus company, rather than accommodating her, would simply strand her wherever
they
went.
Yeah.
In other words, it could happen to anyone.
So what kind of bus company that is? I mean, I know
it could happen to the entire public. It's an issue that would be of interest to the entire bus riding public.
Two good questions. Bill, I don't know. I would contact the county and say, "Here's what happened. How are you going to stop it from happening again?"
Sheriff's Department, they don't really want to give you the answer. Yeah. They don't really know the answer.
It probably doesn't happen that often.
And it may not be a sheriff's department issue. Like city commissioners getting in touch.
And getting in touch directly with them.
A few years back, there was an incident on the bus where I was a passenger on the bus and a fight broke out between two other passengers. And I happened to have a can of bear spray with me, a large can of pepper spray. And one of the people that were fighting knocked the other one onto the floor of the bus and was kicking him in the head, and he wouldn't stop. So I pulled out my can of bear spray and ordered him to stop. He wouldn't do it, so I sprayed pepper spray in the bus. And I succeeded in terminating the fight, you might say. I got arrested for unlawful. It was battery that they arrested me for.
You're kidding.
And so I went to jail for one night. I was bailed out. And then I told my public defender that I was demanding a trial by jury. And before long, the case was thrown out of court. The public defender and the state's attorney together went to talk to the guy who was in jail, the guy that I had rescued, because it turned out he threw the first punch, which I didn't even know about at the time. But anyway, so he ultimately pleaded guilty to battery and spent a little bit of time in jail, about a month or so in jail. But in my case, the case was thrown out of court. So
that's a heck of a story there,
Bill.
Are you carrying bear spray around with you? And that's amazing. When you're on the Appalachian Trail.
I have a shoulder bag that I can carry the, pepper spray in. I have a concealed carry permit, which I didn't have at the time. But I now have a concealed weapons carry permit, so I can carry a gun now as well. But the issue is, can I carry it on the bus? And that's what I'm wondering.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean,
they say no. I mean, the bus company has a light inside listing all its rules, but not outside the bus now. You don't find that out till you're inside the bus. If you read the flashing letter sign on some of the buses, have that, not all of them, and it lists their rules, and one of them is weapons are not permitted. And it doesn't say anything about whether you have a concealed carry permit or not.
Yeah, so the bear spray broke up the fight, yes?
Right.
I can't believe you got arrested for that.
Well, thank you so much for your call, Bill. Appreciate it.
Okay, thanks.
Okay.
Interesting.
Interesting caller.
Let's take Gary.
Yeah, it looks like we've got Gary on the line. We had been talking about the Parkland case at the top of the show. Looks like he is going to weigh in. How are you doing, Gary?
Hey, how you doing? Just real quick, for the previous caller, you should never take public transportation again. But anyway,
something we don't have a choice, Gary. I mean, this guy's prepared. He's got pepper spray. He's got a gun.
Right.
This guy's, what are you talking
about? Yeah, no thanks. But,
he's like taxi driver, man. That guy.
Savage Bickle, whatever his name was.
Clean up the streets.
Yeah, vigilante justice at hand. But anywho, hey, it's nice to talk to you guys. I see your commercials all the time. Mr. Fair, I'm 38 years old, and I've been seeing you forever on TV. So it's really
I'm a lot older than you.
Yeah, how does that make you feel?
old. I'm getting old, man.
You were still a little kid when I started doing this, but go ahead.
Hey, two things real quick, and I'll get off. As far as the cop down in Parkland, I was down there helping a dude out renovating a house like 3 days after that shooting happened. And the whole town was like a mortuary. I mean, there wasn't no cars on the streets. Everyone was wearing black armbands, you know, respectably. But I can tell you one thing to back up your point. If that cop has any lawyer worth his weight in salt, he ought to get a change of venue out of that county. Because there ain't no way he's getting a fair trial down
yeah.
there.
Yeah.
And should he do jail time? I don't really think so. I mean, like, you know, the whole theme of this hour has been you can't predict the future. And that's the whole thing. You know, no one knows what he could or couldn't have done had he walked into that building and confronted a guy. Or, like you said, walked into the wrong part of the building.
Yeah.
You know, it's one of those things that happened. And they're just looking at it's a witch hunt, if you ask me.
What do you mean the whole town was shut down? I mean, people were not...
It wasn't shut down per se. It was just like everybody in the whole town didn't even bother coming out of their house. It was like the whole town was in mourning.
Okay.
And everybody down there is watching the news. Trust me.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Is that a high upper-end neighborhood there? Is that a...
Oh, yes. There. Yeah, Tamarack. Oh, Tamarack. Oh, yeah. It's like I would put like... somewhere right between Ponte Vedra and the upper end of Beaches area, somewhere to that. But also, Mr. Farah, as far as the criminally negligent homicide, what did you say, the prosecution?
The malicious thing, prosecution, yeah.
Well,
you get somebody arrested for no, you don't have any basis
reason at all.
It, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Out in Texas, the man was executed a few years back. His name was Cameron Todd Willingham. Have you ever heard of that?
No, sir.
His wife and kids burned up to death in a house fire. Police showed up. They seen him running out the house in his underwear. He was on fire. Anyway, the arson investigator comes in and says, nope, this guy burned his wife and kids up. He got the death penalty out in Texas and was executed. The arson investigator then got sued by somebody else down the road, and they come to find out he had been doing this for like 20 years, putting these people in jail for shit. They didn't do. And I was wondering if you ever heard of that.
No, I mean, I'm sure. This is not the first time I've heard something like that. I'm sure many innocent people have been executed. That's a heck of a story. Too bad.
Yeah. Hey, but Mr. Farah, I'll catch you. It's really nice to talk to you guys.
Yeah, thanks so much for your call, Gary.
Definitely appreciate it.
Sure.
But just to go back to that change of venue, and you're asking about, like, post... how it felt. I grew up in Colorado in Littleton, and I remember after the Columbine shooting, it was such an eerie feeling of people not wanting to go out. Like, it just felt like he described that same sort of energy. It didn't seem like you were seeing anybody.
Nobody wanted to go out.
Yeah, it was just such a sad energy about the whole town. But you are listening to Consumer Law Hour here on WOKV. We are taking your calls. Phone number is 855-765-1045. Again, that phone number is 855-765-1045. Welcome back to Consumer Law Hour here on WOKV. We are taking your questions. If you tuned in last week, you probably know the answer to this one. But we've got Arthur from Amelia Island on the line, and he has a question about the Good Samaritan laws in Florida. How are you doing, Arthur?
Pretty good.
Can you hear us all right?
Yes. Can you hear me?
Yes, we're okay now.
Thank you for taking my call. You gentlemen, first of all, you're very informative. So I enjoy your show very much. I'm kind of new to Florida. I'm a retired physician from the Northeast. I gave up my licenses when I retired, so I'm not licensed anymore. I love to play at a tennis club. Unfortunately, we've had a member or two pass away from heart attacks on the tennis club, so we purchased as a club one of the automatic defibrillators. And the club members have asked me, since I'm very knowledgeable in this area, would I teach members how to use the defibrillator? It's called an AED, automatic defibrillator, which I'm willing to do and doing. Here's my question. I knew the Good Samaritan laws in Rhode Island where I practice. I don't know them in Florida. What are they in general? And would I incur, obviously I know what I'm doing and I'm going to teach them the right way, But is there any liability for me?
Okay, that's a good question. I wish I had time to look it up. I know, I think Florida has recently passed a statute dealing with defibrillators. And I think there's an immunity component to that, that if you're using the defibrillator, that you're immune from any type of civil action. But if you leave your phone number, I will do the research and I will call you back on that and give you the definitive answer.
Yeah, because that will Samaritan's an emergency situation. So if you're just training.
Yeah, but he's worried about if somebody uses a defibrillator, if they don't know what they're doing.
Yeah, exactly.
Or they use it wrong.
I'm both interested in both, gentlemen.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. But generally, let me tell you, the good Samaritan law in Florida is that you have immunity. The only way that you can be sued by voluntary, let's say somebody's in a car accident and you pull over to try to help them. That's a good Samaritan. The only way you can be sued in that situation is if you do something to increase the risk. Okay. Let's say you're a doctor and they're laid out and they've got a broken neck and you start moving them around or pulling them down the street. I mean, that could be an argument that you increase the risk. And maybe, yeah, you could have some luck for that. But when it comes to the defibrillator, if you leave your phone number with Scott, I will get you an answer on what your exposure is on that.
Thank you very much.
And you can pass
that
along.
Thank you so much for your call. Really appreciate it. And thank you, everybody, for your calls. Thank you, Eddie and Chuck Fair from Fair and Fair.
Everybody have a nice 4th of July.
That's right. Take care.
Don't get too tipsy. Live on.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.